This is VSiN Prime Time, live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
TJ McConnell drives to the hole, spinning reverse layup, and he misses, and the Pacers lead 25-24. Well, I mentioned in the previous segment that I would guarantee that later in the first quarter or by the second quarter, this game would be tied or the Thunder would have the lead. During the commercial break, it was tied at 24. So Thunder went on a run to tie the game. Now the Pacers, with two free throws by Benedict Mathurin here, go up 26-24. And the live number, OKC minus 4.5. The live total, 240.5. That's the biggest adjustment. The game, the point spread has dropped 1.5 from pregame. The total is up 12.5 points, right around 240. Money line minus 175. OKC was about minus 220 when the game tipped off. 26-24, Pacers have the lead. And, well, didn't take long for the Thunder to get right back in this thing after they trailed by 7.
Obviously, it's early, but I feel like, I'm curious what you think. I think we're headed for a hell of a game.
I like the Pacers to cover.
Yeah. I think ultimately, I'm curious if you think the Thunder win the game or do you think the Pacers actually go up 3-1? I have a feeling the Thunder win a close game. I don't want to sit here, hedge and be like, oh, well, I like the Pacers to cover, but I like OKC to win because then it feels like you could just say you're right either way. I mean, I bet the Pacers plus 6, that was my only bet.
Right.
But I do think this is a down-to-the-wire game. I think, 3, 4, 5 minutes to go, this is anybody's game. And I think the Thunder ultimately pull it out. Don't feel great about it, but I just think in a close game, I'll take the 6. But I don't actually think – I just have a hard time. I know I've been wrong about this. I have a hard time seeing the Pacers being up 3-1 in the NBA Finals. I can't quite get there. Do you think that the Pacers actually win this game?
It's not going to surprise me if they do. Even before the series, I said it wouldn't surprise me if they won the series. I don't see the OKC Thunder being this dominant team that so many handicappers and mainstream media people have built them up to be. I've never seen it. I know they won 68 games, and all the numbers showed that this was an elite team, but to me, the Thunder never resembled one of these great NBA championship teams we've seen in the last 30 years. I kept saying, who's the second best player on this team? Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is great, but he's not Michael Jordan. He's not Kobe Bryant, right?
And he's not LeBron. He's not Steph. No, right? I completely agree. And I think there's a bigger picture here, a bigger conversation. The NBA regular season isn't what it was 10, right. 15, 20 years ago now. Mm-hmm. They play 75%, 50% speed sometimes where – it's almost just a tune-up to the playoffs, and you can get fooled by a lot of the stats, and you have to keep that in mind. We saw the Heat, make a lot of people look bad, a lot of people look dumb 2 years ago when they made the finals. It's a different sport. It's always been a different sport in the playoffs, but I just don't think teams take the regular season as seriously as they did in years past, decades past. It's just more of a tune-up period over the 82 games, and I think that's something you got to keep in mind headed into the playoffs.
Right. That's exactly right. And the Cleveland Cavaliers were the second best regular season team, and they got bounced by the Pacers in the playoffs. OKC really sloppy with the ball here in the first quarter. Multiple turnovers. Pacers have had some fast breaks. That's what I was talking about. The Thunder need to slow down the pace of this game. It's hard to do that when you're coughing the ball up on the offensive end and leading to fast breaks on the other end. The Pacers right now up 28-26. OKC's got 5 turnovers here in the first quarter, which is a high number for a team that doesn't usually turn the ball over a lot. Live numbers, 3.5. OKC minus 3.5, total 238.5. Just to follow up, you're talking about some of the best NBA championship teams. We could go back to the 80s and talk about the Lakers, Celtics, Pistons, and all that. But let's 90s, you got the Bulls. You had the Spurs teams that had had 3 legit stars. Lakers with Kobe and Shaq. Celtics had the big 3. Warriors obviously had multiple stars led by Stephen Curry. The LeBron James team had multiple stars. I just don't see it with OKC. It's a young team with a lot of talent. Jalen Williams is a really good number 2 player. Lou Dort's a really good player. But you don't have 2 stars. And I don't think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is at that elite level of a Stephen Curry or any of those big-time superstars we talked about. I just don't think he's there yet. He doesn't have those games that really awe you, where you say, man, this guy is awesome. He steadily goes out there, gets to the free throw line a lot. He knocks down those mid-range jumpers. He's a really good player. He gets his points. But to me, he's not the Kobe Bryant, Stephen Curry type of star. Right now, the Pacers up 31-26. The other thing about OKC is, have we overrated their defense? Have most people overrated this OKC D? It's supposed to be an elite defense, Will. But again, like you were talking about, a lot of those numbers are regular season numbers, right? You're putting a lot of weight on what this team does in regular season. The Pacers are not having a lot of problems here running up and down the floor against Oklahoma City. And there's, as I say that, Pascal Siakam goes right through the lane, cuts right through the lane, and dunks on three guys.
Yep. No, it's a good point. And even though I've been a believer more so than not in OKC, even though I understand the skepticism, a couple things. They do have a little bit of a front runner type nature to them, where you're going to beat all of these teams by 20, 30 points. And when it looks really good, they are on the top of their game. Mm-hmm. When they're bullying these teams, they do feel a little bit like a front runner, a bully, and they don't have that veteran presence. I saw something on Twitter today. It was like the 29th, I think, anniversary of Steve Kerr hitting the shot against the Jazz when Jordan passed it. They don't have that veteran presence, the Kerr, the Robert Horry, you know, that guy who's just a veteran role player to calm things down, to hit a big shot. It's a lot of young guys. It's pretty much all young guys. And that is something, again, this is a past post because it's not like I thought this coming into the series, but it is worth mentioning at least.
You talked about veterans on the OKC. I guess you're talking about guys, believe it or not, you're talking about guys like Alex Caruso and Isaiah Hartenstein, right?
Right. No, it's a good point.
I just really don't have seasoned veterans. Caruso is one of those guys I look at as like a seasoned veteran. I like Caruso a lot. I heard somebody question on this network this week, why is Caruso playing so much? Well, he's a veteran. He knows he's a winning player. He makes a lot of plays in different ways to help a team win games. I'm not looking at the plus minus necessarily in the box score. I think that's a deceiving number a lot of times. I think Caruso's the guy out there who's kind of the glue to the team in a lot of ways, helping the Thunder win a lot of games, doing a lot of things I think T.J. McConnell does, don't always show up in the box score necessarily. McConnell was so important to what the Pacers did in Game 3. You know, it's interesting when you talk about what the Pacers did in taking down the Knicks in the Eastern Conference Finals and Tom Thibodeau getting fired because of it. We're going to have, in the next segment, we're going to hear from Charles Barkley and his thoughts on how things worked out for the Knicks after they fired Tibbs. But, Will, when you looked at the Pacers and the Knicks, you stacked them up side by side, it was obvious the Pacers have done a much better job creating depth, drafting, developing players. Hey, look, Obi Toppin, a former Knicks top 10 pick, is coming off the Pacers bench, by the way. The Pacers have done a much better job of drafting and developing players and creating a deeper bench than the Knicks did. And I don't think that blame should have all fallen on Tom Thibodeau's shoulders. I think the GM's got to take some of that blame, too. The Pacers were simply a deeper, I would say, more talented team with better shooters than what the Knicks had, right?
Totally agree. I do think there was some element of the Knicks offense that was a little, you know, antiquated, 3 yards in a cloud of dust to draw a football comparison, when there's just not as much zip, not as much movement, not as much, you know, crispness as what the Pacers have. But no, I think the Knicks, it's a flawed roster. Anytime your two best players are minuses and big minuses on defense, especially at point guard, et cetera, when you put those guys on pick and roll, that's a flaw that's going to get exposed sooner rather than later. Yeah, they made the conference finals at a weak Eastern Conference. But, you know, was there some flukiness in those Boston comebacks? I think there probably was. And I never watched this Knicks team or looked at this Knicks team as a title team. And that trade, giving up 5 first-rounders for Bridges, was completely ridiculous, a total, total overpay. So, yeah. Your point is well taken.
Asinine to give up 5 first-rounders for Bridges. And, again, I think that's got to fall on the GM more than Tibbs. We're going to talk a little bit more about what happened with the Knicks after the break. But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander just hit a pull-up from the elbow. I mean, he's so smooth with those moves, about, you know, 18 feet from the basket. That's what makes him so good. Pulls the Thunder within 2. actually now within three, 35-32. T.J. McConnell gets fouled and answers with two free throws. So 14 seconds to go in the first quarter. Pacers up three, 35-32. Not a good first quarter if you bet the under. This game is on pace to fly over the total. With the live total right now at 238.5. Thunder's still the favorites in the game, though. Down three. Now down one. 35-34 at the end of the first quarter. Thunder's going to score here to get a bucket, and it's going to be 35-34 at the end of the first. Each team has hit nine free throws here in the first quarter. Update on college baseball from Omaha. A big strikeout there for Louisville. Bases loaded for Oregon State. Two outs. And Beavers lead the Cardinals 3-1. VSiN is live from Omaha for the College World Series. If you didn't know it, we're broadcasting straight from Rocco's, home of the legendary Jello Shot Challenge, with live shows Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Catch money moves and follow the money with on-site insight, atmosphere, and best bets for the tournament. I believe Follow the Money with Mitch and Paul is going to be broadcast on Saturday morning from Omaha. For all the coverage and your free College World Series betting guide, head to vsin.com/CWS. And again, Coastal Carolina took down Arizona 7-4 in the first game today. And Oregon State on top of Louisville 3-1. Bases loaded, two outs. Bottom of the sixth in the nightcap there in Omaha. All right, quick break. More on the Thunder and the Pacers. End of the first quarter, 35-34, Indiana.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
10 seconds into the second quarter, Benedict Mathurin buries a three, and the Pacers take a 38-34 lead. Thunder going to come back and get a basket here to make it 38-36. Will Hill, Matt Eumanns on VSiN Primetime. Will, we got a fast pace tonight. We thought the OKC Thunder might want to try to slow this game. That's not happening. This game is being played on the Pacers' terms.
Has there ever been a more appropriately named team than the Pacers with how they play?
Ironic, isn't it? The Pacers playing at a fast pace. And pace is so important in this series. When it's fast, you're playing right into the Pacers' hands, and that's what's going on right now. 40-38 Indiana over OKC.
Do you feel any differently here? I know you don't love your under bet, but do you feel any differently about, you know, taking the six, laying the six, anything you jump in live here as these teams continue to trade buckets?
No, probably not. I thought the point to jump in on OKC, we mentioned it when it was the line was down to 1.5. OKC was -1.5, and the money line was -120. That's when I would have jumped in on OKC. Obviously, we were busy here on the show. I didn't have a chance to do it, but I that was a play I wanted to make at the time. And I think if you're sitting with Pacers +6 pregame, you got to feel pretty good about it. The way things are playing out right now, and Indy Jeff Seeley talked about it when he was on with us in the pregame show, it just feels like this is going to be a tight game tonight. That even if the Pacers drop it, it's going to be a close game. That's why Indy Jeff was taking the Pacers +6. That's probably why you took the Pacers +6. You felt like even if OKC was going to win tonight, it was not going to be a blowout, right? It was not going to be by much of a margin. And if you bet the Thunder, you're going to have to sweat this out. I wanted to play, if anything, I would have thought, you know, the Thunder money line would have been the play tonight. But you can't lay 220. You can't lay 220 with the Thunder on the road when they're 0-8 ATS on the road in the playoffs. But when it dropped to 120, that's when I would have played OKC.
And it is funny here to see Reggie Miller here and all his Pacers stuff after broadcasting the Pacers-Knicks Eastern Conference Finals and, you know, trying to be impartial and all of that. And then here he is, you know, a week or 10 days later, and he's, you know, basically a Pacers cheerleader screaming on the sidelines.
You know, I don't have a problem with that. I'm going to tell you why I don't have a problem. And I'm not a Reggie Miller fan, never have been, never liked him. But I don't have a problem with him doing that because he's one of the Pacers' all-time greats, right? And it's obvious that he wants the Pacers to win. He's not working. He can be out there courtside rooting for the Pacers. There's nothing wrong with that at all. I'll tell you what's wrong. When you have a carnival barker like Screamin' Ace Smith on ESPN who's a Knicks fan, who's openly cheering for the Knicks on pregame shows, halftime shows, and on every other show on ESPN. To me, that's a bigger issue, Will, because the media members are supposed to be objective.
Yeah, and he's a bit of a phony Knicks fan, too. I remember there was one year where it was like a Heat-Knicks finals, or Heat-Knicks conference. I don't know if it was a conference final or a playoff series. And he's, well, I know I'm a Knicks fan. I know I'm from New York, but if Miami wins, the weather's better for us going forward because we're covering the series. So you feel like all of this Knicks, I'm a Knicks fan on this. It's like Spike Lee. A lot of it's for attention. A lot of it, like you said, is a dog and pony show.
Well, Spike Lee became a big St. John's basketball fan at the end of the basketball season when they made the tournament, right? And they were a two seed.
Of course.
When St. John's was in position to win the Big East, Spike Lee became a big St. John's fan, jumping on the bandwagon. We have a tie game again. Chet Holmgren at the free throw line ties it at 40, and boom, the Pacers come back and nail a three. Just like that, man, you can't even take a breath. See, that's why OKC's got to do something here to slow down this Indiana offense, and they're not doing it. And I think this kind of falls on the young coach, too. Look at this. Here's my problem with what OKC is doing right now. We're talking about this being an elite defensive team. Well, after Holmgren makes the free throw, the Thunder don't contend the inbounds pass and don't put any pressure at all on the point guard. They allow T.J. McConnell to bring it up across half court without any ball pressure. He cuts right through the defense. Pacers miss a shot, rebound it, kick it out, and hit a three. Where is this great OKCD everybody's talking about? There's no pressure on the ball handler right now. Look at this. Again, O'Connell getting the Pacers into their half-court offense, and there's no pressure on O'Connell out front with the ball. I just don't think OKC's making the right defensive adjustments here.
Yeah, and it's always dangerous, the three-pointer after an offensive rebound, because everyone crashes towards the glass. A lot of times you get a good look, and they got one on that last possession. And it's hard to watch McConnell and think, you know what, this kid, the best offer he got coming out of high school was Duquesne. Do you remember that? He went to Duquesne, then he went to Arizona. He's a good player. He's a winning player. He's tough. He makes shots. It's hard to believe these scouts sometimes can miss as often, and it's bigly as they do, because that's just and look, Halliburton, SGA, it's not like these guys went 1 and 2 in the draft. These guys went late, end of the lottery. It's not like you need to tank to get these superstars. If you do the scouting right and you develop the players right, you can hit on these guys. And these are guys, not only did they go later in the draft relatively, but they got acquired via trades. The Clippers traded SGA in that Paul George deal, that ridiculous overpay. And the Kings had Halliburton and said, you know what, we got too many guards, let's get rid of this guy. So these teams, as good as they are with the scouting, they're the best in the world, all of that stuff, they still make some big, big mistakes.
You hit on one of my favorite topics. I'm going to expand on that here in a second. I do want to point out that when OKC was trying to inbound the ball, the Pacers had three defenders up there pressuring the inbounds pass. Full court pressure is what the Pacers are putting on OKC. On the other end, OKC putting no pressure on the Pacers' inbound pass and letting McConnell dribble across half court with no ball pressure whatsoever. And again, that's, I think, Rick Carlisle showing that he's just a far superior coach, and he's making the right adjustments here. OKC does take a 44—Pacers go back up 45-44 here. Thunder not making the threes tonight. They're throwing up a bunch of bricks from three and not really doing anything remarkably well in the offensive end of the floor. So you're talking about player evaluation and the NBA draft and some of the blunders that have been made in the draft over the years. T.J. McConnell, by the way, was on the drive and the layup. Great play there by O'Connell, right, cutting right through that vaunted OKC defense for a layup. 45-44, Pacers have the lead about halfway through the second quarter. So, Will, the last time I was in New York, it's been a long time, 2013, I was there to cover the NBA draft. And that was one of the worst NBA draft classes of all time. You remember that was one where Anthony Bennett from UNLV went number one overall. You talk about NBA scouts not doing their job. Do you remember who went number 15 in that draft? By the way, if you look at the top 10 or 12 picks in that draft, just unremarkable players. Just guys who were busts, guys who didn't stick in the league very long or make much of an impact in the league whatsoever. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yep.
The Greek Freak went number 15. Is he number 14 or number 15 in that 2013 NBA draft? If you're a scout and you see that guy physically, The first time you see the freak, you're like, wow, what a specimen he is. How could that guy slip to 15th in that pitiful 2013 NBA draft class?
Hard to believe. And that was a time when the Sixers were tanking and they didn't really care about the wins and losses. They cared really about the losses. I was surprised they didn't swing big looking back at it. Like, you know what? If you whiff, we whiff. Who cares? We're not trying to win anyway. But if we had a home run here, we're in great shape. They ended up picking Nerlens Noel. That really is one of the all-time bad drafts. And I remember, I think that was on a couple things about that draft. That was on my birthday, I believe, of June 27th. And that was the night of the Nets-Celtics trade. So there was a big, like, NBA night. I remember being out to dinner and hearing about the trade. And I was shocked. Nobody had Anthony Bennett going number one. That was one of the more shocking draft day decisions you can ever remember, because that was just – and I'm curious if I'm remembering it correctly. You were there. Were you as shocked as everybody else? Was it as surprising as I remember Bennett going number one?
Yes, because I was covering UNLV basketball at the time. That's why I was out there doing the draft. And I talked to Bennett's agent like 10 minutes before the draft started. It was in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center. And I said, hey, when do you think Bennett's going to go? And his agent said, I have no idea. He could slip all the way to number seven, number eight. We're not sure. And so I thought, okay, good. I got time to kick back, eat a sandwich here, watch the first few picks go off the board. And then Bennett goes number one overall, and everyone was stunned. Mike Brown was the coach of the Cavs at the time. And apparently Mike Brown was enamored with Anthony Bennett and his upside, and that's why he went number one overall. The other players in that draft who went before the Greek Freak at number 15, Victor Oladipo, Otto Porter, Cody Zeller, Alex Lynn, Nerlens Noel, Ben McLemore, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who's a decent player, Trey Burke, C.J. McCollum, Michael Carter-Williams, Stephen Adams, Kelly Olynyk, and Shabazz Muhammad. All went before the Freak went number 15. What are the scouts doing? How could you look at the Greek Freak and say, hey, we're going to pass on that guy, and we're going to take Kelly Olynyk?
Not a smart pick, and if you do want to bet smarter this football season, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a full year for just $199, plus a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by Josh Applebaum, a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making smarter NFL bets. Sign up now and get instant access to a daily email with all the best bets from hosts and their guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access on the VSiN Watch app, plus our 25-26 NFL betting guide dropping July 1st. Don't miss out on the limited-time offer. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Use promo code BOOK, VSIN.com/subscribe. We will be back with more finals coverage after this.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We have an official review, a delay on the floor in Indianapolis as the officiating crew and the league try to figure out if this soft foul should be a flagrant. Will Hill, we had a breakaway here. Alex Caruso hit the floor on a foul, and in the old NBA, it would just be a play on. It would be a foul, two free throws. Why is there so much debate here about whether this should be a flagrant?
My wife gives me dirtier looks than this foul here is in terms of hard contact. I mean, this is ridiculous. But as we're reviewing this, I don't know if you saw this, because I think you would have mentioned it either during the break or right now. Aaron Judge has tied the game, and I believe we gave the stat that six at-bats against Crochet, six strikeouts. I believe it was Crochet. He homered off a long homer off over the monster. So now a 1-1 game, one out in the ninth, Bellinger up, Yankee old buddy, Aroldis Chapman in, still throwing the ball extremely well. But a tie game at Fenway, Crochet not able to finish it out. Very rarely do you see these pitchers on the mound in the ninth inning. You almost have to do a double take when you see a starting pitcher out past the seventh inning. But Judge makes him pay the price, and we have a tie game here in Fenway.
All right, just follow that up. Obi Toppin fouled Alex Caruso on the breakaway. There's no way that should have been a flagrant foul, but it was called a flagrant. We saw Scott Foster at the table there, and Caruso's going to get two free throws. OKC will get the ball. I don't know, Will. I don't see it. You said your wife gives you dirtier looks. That's a good line. How was that a flagrant foul? I just don't I don't see it there. I think the NBA's gone a little bit too soft with calls like that.
It's a ridiculous call. The only explanation is he bumped into him without any intent to make a play on the ball. He just drove his shoulder into Caruso's shoulder, but he swipes at the ball after. I mean, that's not a flagrant foul. I mean, we look at all these different ways. I'd love to hear the interpretation. Okay, see now 13 of 13 at the line. So not playing great defense, but hey, when you can get to the line 13 times halfway through the second quarter and you can make all your free throws and it looks like they're going back there, a good way to not only stay in a game, but to maintain a lead. So a 3-point lead with a chance to become a 5-point lead here. OKC is just living at the free throw line, but I'm with you. Ridiculous, ridiculous call. You can't call that.
So drive to the bucket by Wiggins, and there was no foul. Did you see this?
Didn't see much there.
There's no foul there. That is not a foul. And again, OKC going to the free throw line for two. Boy, that's got to irritate you if you're a Pacers fan. That was Wiggins jumping into the defender. Ball don't lie. He misses the first free throw. 49-45, Thunder over the Pacers. And right now, live line, OKC minus 5.5. Total has dipped, Will. We've seen this game slow down a little bit. Shot making not as great here in the second quarter. Total has dropped back down to 231.5 with 5.5 minutes to go before halftime. So getting back to your point on Aaron Judge, you mentioned he was 0 for 6 with 6 Ks against Garrett Crochet. Judge did go deep against Crochet to tie this game at 1. And Crochet had, in the ninth inning, had gone 107 pitches. I'm not going to criticize Alex Cora for letting Crochet try to finish the game because he had great success against Judge. You got to ride your horse to the end. Ride him all the way to the wire when he's been that good. If Aaron Judge hits a solo shot to tie the game, so be it. I like the move by Cora to let his ace try to finish the game. It's not like 107 pitches is Nolan Ryan territory, right?
Yeah, it's not like he has 137 pitches. It's 107. It's a reasonable amount. And it's also not like you got prime Mariano Rivera in the bullpen or Papelbon. You got Aroldis Chapman, who, as we know, you know, can be shaky. He still throws the ball hard. He's still throwing 103, 104. But no second guess whatsoever of Cora. It's just sometimes, you know what? You got a one-run lead. You damned if you do, damned if you don't. And if he had pulled Crochet and whoever he brought in gave up the homer, people would be screaming that you should have left him in. So no problem whatsoever leaving Crochet in.
I got to think Pacers fans, Pacers bettors probably getting a little irritated here. This is the third straight foul call against Indiana. Jalen Williams going to the line. Williams just drove the lane, jumped into the defender, threw up a wild shot that didn't have any chance of going in, and got a foul call and two free throws. You mentioned it just a minute ago. OKC making a living at the free throw line. Right now, 16 for 17 from the free throw line. Well, if you want to know why the Thunder have the lead, it's all about the free throw line. They're 1 for 8 from three, but 16 for 17 from the free throw line.
Is this something that's sustainable? Should you be looking at the Thunder with the idea that eventually they're going to shoot better, and if they can keep getting to the line and eventually some of these threes go in, Pacers are in a lot of trouble? Or do you think the Pacers, the fact that they're at home, the whistles won't continue to go in OKC's favor like this? It's hard to say, right?
I don't know. It looks like the officiating crew's hell-bent on giving the Thunder the better of the whistle tonight. Yeah. What's happened here in the last few minutes is borderline ridiculous with all the calls going OKC's way. One soft flagrant and then two phantom calls on drives in the lane. Pacers 6 for 17 from 3. Well, they have cooled off a little bit. Miles Turner just threw up an air ball from 24 feet. He threw up a 22-footer from 24 feet and had no shot there. Chet Holmgren misses on the other end. So we're starting to see these teams misfire on these jumpers and the pace of the game. Even though it's still fast, the shot-making has not been that great. And that's why the live total keeps dropping. It's 51-48. Thunder with the lead. The totals drop back down to 230.5. So you're definitely seeing the scoring tail off here in the second quarter. Thunder minus 4.5, total 230.5. OKC minus 180 on the money line. Will, we were talking about Tyrese Haliburton before the game. He has a big game, then sometimes he tends to be a ghost. He had, in the previous game, Pacers won game 3. Haliburton nearly put up a triple-double. He had 22 points, 9 rebounds, and 11 assists. You want to check in on Haliburton right now with 4 minutes to go before the half? How about this stat line? 3 points, 4 assists, 1 rebound. It looks like he's turning into a ghost, right? Big game ghost. Big game ghost. You see this pattern too often from Halliburton.
And it's weird because he's such a good player. It's very uncomfortable to sit here and say, oh, Halliburton, you know, he's not clutch. Or he's hit 3 or 4 of the most clutch shots we've ever seen in our life.
No
down
doubt.
One in a finals game, final seconds. He hits it. The Knicks shot, okay, he got a friendly bounce. But he's hit big shot after big shot after big shot. But he just not aggressive enough, not assertive enough. I know OKC's got a lot of weapons defensively to throw at him. But very strange the ebbs and flows of Halliburton's game for what is a really terrific player.
Yeah, I think a lot of times it falls on the – when a guy has a no-show performance, a lot of times people give credit to the defense, right? How great this OKCD is. And where was that defense in Game 3?
I know.
Right? He didn't have many problems with that defense in Game 3. That's because he was a lot more aggressive. He was more assertive. He was forcing the issue. He's not doing that tonight. Even that's a hell of a pass from Halliburton right there, a no-look pass. Siakam with a layup and 53-50 Thunder over the Pacers. We got about 3 minutes to go here. He's not doing the scoring tonight, but that was a nice dish for an easy assist and bucket for Siakam. 3-point game. OKC 4.5-point favorite, total 231.5. The money line on the Thunder back up to minus 220. Will, when you look at the Thunder box score, the 3-point shooting has been abysmal tonight. 1 for 9. But you had the key phrase. You said making a living at the free throw line, 16 for 17 at the line.
Yeah, and I'd be nervous here. Not that the OKC is some great three-point shooting team, but I'd be nervous that I held them to 1 of 9. I mean, we're sitting here with a couple minutes left in the half. They've only made 1 3, and they're up by 3. That would concern me if I'm the Pacers going forward.
I think it's got to be a bit concerning. Pacers start off the game shooting the 3 so well, and right now 7 for 18 at about 39%. But they need Tyrese Halliburton to step up, Andrew Nembhard, Aaron Nesmith. These guys have been a little bit too quiet here in the first half. T.J. McConnell again with 8 points, Benedict Mathurin with 5 off the bench. The Pacers bench has been solid. Pacers have 20 points off the bench so far tonight. And that's after the Pacers outscored OKC 49-18 in bench points in Game 3. When Mathurin had 27 and O'Connell had 10. All right, we've got, let's see, just over 3 minutes to go before halftime. Will, the first half line is going to be a sweat here. If you laid the number with the Thunder in the first half, 53-50, just over 3 minutes to go. And the total dropped back down to 231.5. So this game got off to a fast start, but things have certainly regressed a little bit here in the second quarter.
Yeah, and we mentioned when the total was 240.5, I asked you, maybe this is the peak here in terms of the total. Maybe this is where you jump in on the under. You thought it was a good idea. I don't think either of us bet it, but you know, that's the benefit of doing these live shows. Sometimes you can kind of gauge where the peak of a certain market is and bet accordingly.
69 points are scored in the first quarter. So far, 34 in the second quarter. VSiN Daily Morning Bets Podcast is your first look at today's betting lines, sharp action, and market movement. Start your day with an edge. Listen to the VSiN Daily Morning Bets Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or get it on the VSiN Watch app, the sharpest way to start your day. VSiN Daily Morning Bets.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Check out the sports book here at Circuit. It's jam-packed tonight. Standing room only here at the Circuit Sportsbook, the world's biggest book, and the crowd's been fired up here in the second quarter. Will, we've got the type of game that Paul Bovey, Indy Jeff Seeley, our guests early in the show, that we expected tonight. We thought it was going to be a great one, and it's tight, 55-52, Thunder over the Pacers, final 2 minutes before halftime.
Yeah, and I have some exciting news for you and for the audience. We are under another review. I guess Obi Toppin got whacked. It looks like a little contact to the head. So the star of the game so far has been Scott Foster, and he continues to shine. So anyone that got a Scott Foster prop, he's going way over his in terms of his usage. We are seeing plenty of foul calls, plenty of Scott Foster in this game, as we have yet another review on what looked like pretty innocent, innocuous contact here.
Alex Caruso got the arm. He was going for the ball, and then looked like Lou Dort came over the top with the arms hit Tobin on top of the head. Hey, look, it's going to look worse when you run it in slow motion. In real time, that was nothing. That was just a common foul. Shoot two free throws. Let's move on. Scott Foster has got to be a grandstander here, and we got to have an official review. Is it going to be a flagrant foul? These are the type of things that really annoy you about the NBA. Well, I know you're younger, but in the 80s and 90s, I remember the Celtics and the Pistons having all-out brawls on the floor. Those were legit hard fouls. Pistons and the Bulls. Talk about the Lakers and the Celtics. The NBA in the 80s and 90s was so much better to watch. And I know that kids today are going to scoff at some of that and some of the low scores that you would see in the playoffs between games between teams like the Knicks and the Heat and some of those ugly games. But that right there should never be a flagrant foul. That's a foul, two free throws, play on. It's ridiculous how soft this league has become. That's the second flagrant foul you and I have sitting here and talked about in the last 5 minutes. This should not have been a flagrant.
Yeah, and they're giving him the flagrant. So he's at the line shooting two free throws. He makes the first, misses the second, but I'm surprised they gave it to him. I mean, like you said, once you slow it down, of course, in slow motion, it's going to look malicious, but it's basketball. A guy went for a block. He missed. He caught part of the head there. There was no, you know, malicious intent. It wasn't dangerous or vicious. I'm shocked, man. Some of these are soft calls, and Scott Foster has just really inserted himself into this game. Nobody came here. You know, we're not sitting here in the sports book or at home or wherever you're watching. Nobody said, you know what, I can't wait for this game tonight. Scott Foster's officiating. He thinks he's the star of the game, but he's not. It's ridiculous.
So every game he officiates, he thinks he's a star, right? You've got...
Yeah, it's crazy.
You've got Tyrese Halliburton, Pascal Siakam, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, and Scott Foster. Those are the four guys you can hype up when you're trying to put the marquee up for the game if you're the network tonight. Scott Foster, the third team on the floor of the officiating crew, is very important when you're betting the NBA. I will say that I was complaining that the Pacers were getting the worst of the whistle with those calls. That one went the Pacers' way. So if you're a Pacers backer, you're saying, hey, we deserve that one because we had three bad calls in a row go against us. So maybe it evens out a little bit. Anyway, Pacers get a bucket there on a layup, 57. Now it's tied. Thunder tied up 57 here in the final minute. OKC's about to get a basket, and we'll see what happens here in the final minute before the half. Pacers again. OKC scores. Pacers inbound the ball. There's no pressure. OKC's defense putting no pressure on the point guard. They just let the Pacers roll right into their offense in the half court. I don't understand why OKC's not making some sort of defensive adjustment here. As I say that, I think it's Andrew Nembhard drives the lane. It's Halliburton drives the lane, scores, and he's fouled. And one opportunity, and he's going to make the free throw. 60-57, Pacers over the Thunder here in the final minute. This vaunted OKC defense definitely not living up to the hype, Will Hill.
They are not. And for first half implications, if you bet the Pacers plus the points, you're in good shape. Barring a miracle, you're going to win. And even if you have the money line, you're looking at no worse than a push. You would think with 28 seconds left, OKC can't quite run out the clock. So one possession here for OKC, and barring an offensive rebound, Indy will get a chance to match with, you know, a rush possession, you would think, depending on how this plays out. But barring just catastrophe here, Pacers are going to cover the first half.
They are covering. 60-57 is going to be the halftime score. SGA had a mid-range jumper that spun out, and the Pacers are going to get the last shot of the half, but it's going to be no good. It's Nembhard, actually, from the corner, had an open three and missed it. And 60-57 is going to be your halftime score. Pacers, I believe, in game three in Indy, didn't the Pacers lead 64-60 at halftime?
Yes.
They did, yeah. 64-60 at halftime, and tonight, very similar score here at the half. Indy up 60-57. So we had 69 points scored in the first quarter, and Will, it slowed all the way down to 48 in the second quarter. Talk about a major drop-off, 69-48. But 69 is a high-scoring quarter. You'd expect some regression. You had 21 fewer points scored in the second quarter, And now the live total has dropped all the way to 226.5 at DraftKings. At halftime, OKC a 1.5-point favorite, total 226.5. Money line, OKC minus 120, down 3. So, Will, we've seen some wild swings here in the first half. This is what we talk about with live betting the NBA.
Yeah.
You've had all sorts of opportunities to jump in at good numbers here in the first half.
100%. This is a poster child for live betting the NBA. Pacers got off to a hot start. I think 20-12 up by 8 was probably the highest margin without looking. And then I know it was just a few minutes ago, it seemed like OKC was up 50-45 with that parade to the free throw line. So you could have gotten a better number on the Pacers than you did pre-flop. And you could have gotten a much better number on the Thunder pre-flop at certain times. So, man, now look, it's not as simple as, just timing it perfectly. You're never going to time it perfectly all the time. But when you can do it, man, you can really set up some good numbers and create some good middles, if nothing else.
Taking a look at the box score here at halftime. We talked about Tyrese Haliburton's points prop, 18.5. He scored 5 points there at the very end of the half to get to 8. So Haliburton has 8 points, 5 assists, 1 rebound. At the half, the high scorer for the Pacers is Pascal Siakam with 14 points. Indiana 7-for-19 from 3. That's 37%. Pacers 21-for-44 from the field, 47.7%. Here's the thing that jumps off the page. Well, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has 12 points but 0 free throw attempts. 0 free throw attempts for the free throw merchant. And OKC 1-for-10 from 3. But 16-for-17 from the free throw line. Pacers up 3 at the half.
Yeah, about what I expected. A good game, competitive game, back and forth. That's why I like getting the 6. I still am at where I was before the game. That OKC squeaks out a close, nail-biting win. But wouldn't be surprised at all if the Pacers won. I went into this game thinking, I don't know how you watch the Pacers this last month, 6 weeks, and say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to lay 6 against that team in that building, and I'm going to lay $1.10 on top of it. To me, this was Pacers or nothing. So doesn't mean OKC can't run him out of the gym in the second half here, but a lot on the line. Very good chance here. The winner of this half, the winner of this next 24 minutes is holding up the trophy here in the next week or 10 days with the Pacers. You figure if they get up 3-1, they'll probably win the championship and figure out a way to win one of the next 3. And if OKC can get it to 2-2, the favorite team, 5 at home, 7 at home, they're probably in good shape. So it's been a good series. It's been a fun series. It's been a different series here without, you know, the usual suspects and some interesting teams, the underdog story. I was really looking forward to this game. I'm really looking forward to the second half.
You know what? We've had a great NBA finals so far. We've had a really good Stanley Cup final as well. 100%. Well, I don't know if you were watching the game late last night, but Tim Murray and I went off the air, and Oilers led 4-3 with time running out in the third period. Panthers scored late to force overtime. Oilers get an overtime goal to win 5-4. You felt like last night when Florida went up 3-0 in the first period, that Oilers were basically dead. It looked like the Stanley Cup final was going to go Florida's way for the second year in a row. Edmonton gets the unlikely comeback win, and now we're tied at 2-2 going back to Edmonton for game 5. We'll talk more about this Stanley Cup final series later in the show, but that was a great one last night. We're lucky, actually, that we've had such great championship series here in the NBA and NHL, and it's a good chance we're going to go 7 games in both. But OKC is going to have to win tonight if this one's going to go 7, I would think. I agree with the way you laid it out. NBA Finals and Stanley Cup are here. ProfitX is offering the best odds all playoff long. ProfitX is a peer-to-peer sports exchange available in 40-plus states. The first of its kind in the U.S. You will be able to make your sports picks against other groups of fans rather than against sportsbooks. Exchanges guarantee you the best odds on average by 10 to 20%. Even to request your own odds. Download ProfitX today with code VSEN and earn up to $200 in profit cash over your first month. What's up with the Yankees and the Red Sox? And we're at halftime and Thunder Pacers. Back with a lot more here on VSEN Primetime, the Sports Betting Network.